again, people of marketing. Yes, you guessed it. This right here is a little ad. I'm not sure how much you know about Plannable, but we're a collaboration tool for social media teams, helping marketers around the world create, plan, review, approve, and schedule social media posts. The best part is that you can try Plannable for free, no strings attached. And if it strikes your fancy, we got a special offer just for you. Yes, I'm talking to you, dear listener who hasn't skipped past the ad. Go to plannable.io/listeners and use the discount code when upgrading to get 30% of the first 3 months. That is plannable.io/listeners. Thanks for tuning in and enjoy the episode. Hey everyone, this is Ksenia Muntan and welcome to another episode of People of Marketing podcast. I'm the founder and CEO of Plannable, the collaboration tool for social media teams, and I launched this podcast to take a sneak peek into the lives of top marketers. Every week we explore the story of their careers, the choices, mistakes, wins, and imperfections of their work life. Today, we have Mikey Dowling on the show. He's the Director of Communications at Obsidian. He got his start in QA, moved into production, had a brief stint in audio, and then ultimately found himself in communications when he moved over to social media management. From there, he branched into PR and now runs the Obsidian Communications Department, making sure the voice of Obsidian is consistent, not only through marketing and PR, but to what truly matters, the community. Mikey, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today on People of Marketing.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah. So I would really, really love to start this conversation by connecting a bit the dots in your career, you know, looking a bit looking backwards into the start of your journey. And the first question I want to ask you is, what would you say was your first interaction with marketing and communications, and what got you into communications in the first place?
So I'm a big, big wrestling fan. And while I use social media a lot, I wasn't really keyed in on how successful it could be for companies to bridge a gap between the company and their audience. And watching how wrestling promotions were being able to do that very, very well was super intriguing to me. Because you start up Monday night at like 8 p.m. or 5 p.m. on Pacific time, and the Raw hashtag is number one trending. And like, to me, that's insane to see that something can go that fast in such a short amount of time and have that many people talking about it. So that was super intriguing to me. And then I started seeing that sports in general were doing that same thing because they were just getting content out there and trying to connect with an audience who was watching at the same time or who maybe wasn't. It was trying to vicariously watch, even though they were off doing something else. Mm-hmm. That was a huge hook for me and just seeing like, well, what can other companies do that are the same thing? And like being in games, we are constantly connected to our players. But how can you do that from a brand perspective? And I think that really started to ignite things in my brain of what could possibly be done to be able to like expand that a little bit more.
Right. So you had an interesting start in your career, right? You didn't start directly in marketing or communications in the first place, right? So yeah. You got your start in QA. Can you tell us a little bit more about what the pivot to communications meant for you? You know, and why did you pivot, you know, in the first place? What, you know, attracted you to this world and how was the transition itself? What do you think in the QA helped you with this transition? If there is anything, you know, in that particular background that you think you took with you in the comms world?
I think it was a few different things. So I've been working at Obsidian Entertainment for 12 and a half years now, yeah. Having started it off in QA. So I'm pretty ingrained with the company and its internal culture. So having gone from QA into production and then doing some audio, I was able to touch a lot of our games and see a lot of what makes Obsidian Obsidian when it comes to its game development. And I was at just a kind of a crossroads in my personal life where things were kind of going crazy, and our studio head had brought me into his office and was like, "Hey, I know things are crazy." Our studio head, Fergus Urquhart, brought me into his office and he said, "I know things are crazy, but are you happy with where you are right now?" And I was like, "Not really. Like, I feel like I'm kind of not pulling the way I need to," because I was doing sound design, but I didn't really go to school for sound design. And we had people who were very well trained at that. And like, I could do some things, but not to the level that they could. And I was just feeling kind of floundering. And he's like, "Well, I'll tell you what I see in you. Like, you're very charismatic. Like, you can walk in a room and talk to anybody, and that's fantastic. And you also don't let a lot of things get you down. You can be in a meeting where suddenly we have to change a ton of stuff in a video game, because that just happens. And you'll walk out like, okay, well, let's get it done." And that's a quality that's kind of hard to come by. "I don't know what that means. So maybe take some time, think about it, and get back to me at what you want to do." And it just so happened that the very next day, my dad ended up passing away. That, I took some time off and was just kind of thinking of, well, what can I possibly do? Clearly now's the time for change more than any other. And so I started looking at our social media accounts and seeing where they were, and was kind of blown away to see that we had fewer people following us on social media than who backed us for a Kickstarter that we did. And just wanted to see how I could potentially help make that grow, and just came up with an idea and some plans, and then went back into work and had a lunch meeting with Fergus for 2 hours, where I essentially pitched him the vision of taking over the Obsidian social media accounts and going like, "Hey, look, like, wrestling does it this way. They just connect. I don't think we can do it to that extent because I'm just one person, but I think that we can connect with our community more and be more human and make advocates for us a little bit better. Just talk to our fans. Like, they follow us for a reason, so they should be interacted with, because that's super, super important." And afterwards he's like, "Okay, well, do it and see what happens." And that's how I ended up pivoting in and just talking to the community more.
Wow, that's such an amazing story. I think it actually takes me very well to my next question. When you go through a transition like yours, where you kind of switch from one area, one profession to another, one industry to another, it's so important to have someone to support you. It's so amazing that you did. You had someone to support you and to encourage you in that journey, in that pivot. I'm wondering if you were also following anyone else in the communications or social media space, any role models or influencers that you were looking up to in order to, you know, when you were making that pivot.
I was looking at other companies that were like ours, mm-hmm. to see what they were doing and seeing how they interacted with their community.
So more at the brands, less at people.
Yeah, because it was, mm-hmm. I was still new to the field, right? So I didn't know the people behind the brand yet. And there's still some that I love what they do with their brand, and I've never met the person, and I'm always like, I really want to. Like, if I can meet the Wendy's social media account
person, the Wendy's one. Yeah.
Because I think they're doing a fantastic job. But the other brands that were similar to ours, I would just look at and see how they engage and see the engagement that they got. Like, I think Larian Studios does a great job with their social media accounts. And when I was starting, they had a smaller following, but a very, very hardcore audience who engaged very, very well. And I thought that was really cool to see. BioWare is another company that's a lot like us and also has a very engaged community across all their different brands. So it was cool watching them and just having something to strive for and to kind of be more like, while also being ourselves. I never wanted to emulate directly what someone else was doing. I wanted to kind of build our own voice, and just kind of let people know that when Obsidian sent a tweet out, they kind of knew who it was, even if they didn't read the company name, like, oh, that's probably from Obsidian.
From the tone of voice and the style.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's mostly just me turned to 11. And that's just kind of how it's been since I took them over. But it's also fun because it's not a voice you would normally expect from a company. And the main reason I like what we do and why I do it the way that we do is I think we live in an age where people kind of know when they're being marketed to. You have to sell because that's our jobs, right? Like, we need to make sure that people are playing our games and having fun and that they're buying them so that we can continue to make more games so people can have more fun. But I think we're more often than not, we're in a generation of people who grew up knowing exactly how they were being sold to. So when you can give a human voice behind it and not always pitch people, instead just kind of be there with them and enjoy the ride and give them credence to the things that they may like that isn't directly related to you, I think that goes super far. So that kind of style is what I took and then just kind of ran with it.
I'm curious if throughout your evolution towards communications throughout PR and social media from QA, if there was anything that you did not expect about the comms world, something that, you know, surprised you in a bad or in a good way, it doesn't really matter, but something you weren't expecting when you started that transition.
I don't think I expected to be as directly connected to our community as I am. I had no plans to just being like, yeah, follow me on everything, add me, I don't care, let's talk. I never would have thought when I started doing this 5 years ago now that people would message me on Facebook Messenger and just ask me for advice on something, or like tell me that they've graduated with a degree in game design and can't wait to make their second best game after the game that we already made. Like, I think that's really, really cool. Never would have thought that would ever have been possible. So that kind of thing is pretty amazing. And also just being in this area where I'm connected to community in such a way that I kind of like have more of an idea of what they want to see from us, which is really cool. And just trying to do our best to make sure that they're getting that from us, from our games, and making sure that they're as connected as they possibly can be.
Why do you think that happened? I think that's, you know, every social media manager's dream to be so connected to their community. Why do you think you achieved that? What's, you know, the secret sauce?
Well, I don't know if it's everyone's dream, because it can also be scary at times.
Yeah, when you mess I can up, imagine. Yeah, overwhelming. They get angry.
And so the one thing I never want to do is disappoint our community. For me, it actually ended up happening through Facebook, in that we were getting these messages one day over and over and over again that just was asking us to make a sequel to a game that we made before, and we couldn't because we don't own the license. So we were just like, sorry, like, we don't have that IP. We're really, really glad you like the game. We hope that you like the games that we make in the future. And I just kind of had to get that out there, because we try and answer everyone, even if it's as innocuous as like a 2-sentence blurb. And that actually ended up having people be like, hey, like, it's so cool that you're answering people. Because also Messenger allows you to do this all in real time with them, which becomes insane sometimes, but fun. Like, we're from this Facebook group that started bombing you with this stuff. Do you want to come in and hang out with us? And I was like, sure, add me. let's see what this is. And so I just ended up going into a Facebook group and hanging out with fans and just seeing the stuff that they were saying and like watching what they were doing, talking with them pretty regularly. And that was pretty incredible. And I ended up, oddly enough, meeting my partner in that group, which is pretty cool too. So,
wow, such a story.
Yeah, it's been great. And not anything I would have ever expected, but it's pretty fantastic to see. And just being able to connect with people on that level and just kind of be more human, and they'll follow through everything. Like, there's been people from that group still who've seen a lot of my life happen in the last 5 years, which is pretty crazy to know, but also really, really cool. But at the same end, like, I know that when we're going to, if something's going to happen that is going to disappoint them, like, I just have to hope that they take it and know that it's not on them, that we're not trying to do anything bad and negative towards them. We're just trying to do what we can and what's best. So it definitely has its balances, because you never know when someone's going to turn and then suddenly there's death threats, you know? So it's the world of communications.
Yeah. Now I see what you mean by it's not every social media manager's dream. It's, you know, it's a lot. It can be a lot sometimes.
Yeah.
But I actually had a question I wanted to ask you, and I think I got my answer. I wanted to ask you about random, seemingly insignificant events that go on and change someone's life. And I think I got mine. I got yours already. The group where, you know, probably at that time it didn't seem like a big deal, right? But then, you know, it made such a huge impact in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, they've being going into that group, I think, was probably the most eye-opening thing in going into communications. Just because it was like, wow, this is a way that you can actually actively talk to people on a different level. And I, whenever I give talks about it, I always recommend that, or I always state, this isn't for everyone. Not everyone should do this. It has just worked for me. It takes a skin to kind of be able to go in and see very, very brutal, honest opinions about the games that you make and the things that you're doing as a company. And you're like, wow, okay, well, these people don't really like this. But then you see a lot of people who are like, well, no, we actually really like that thing. So then you're just kind of waiting what works better and what seems to be attaching more. It's a great way to see if your entire campaign is working well, because if people are super hyped the entire time, like, oh, great, we did the good thing. That's also very, very intriguing. But also, I never want to use it as like I'm some weird company spy in the group. Like, most of the time I just kind of keep to myself and don't really go in unless they tag me in something, and then I talk to them for a bit and then leave. Just because it feels weird, like, watching every moment and getting like these weird, not really scientific surveys from communities of people who are just essentially crap posting all over the internet. So, yeah.
I would love to know what was the highlight of your career so far, and the lowest point as well. Do you have anything like that top of mind? You know, proudest moment, but also, you know, the lowest one.
I have a few. I think proudest among that list would be announcing The Outer Worlds at the Game Awards. That was very, very incredible and meant a lot. Just because the communications team worked really hard to get to that point. The dev team worked to get everything ready for the trailer and make it look awesome. And our marketing team at our publisher, Private Division, also kicked a ton of ass to get all that going. And having that moment just kind of pull off into a way that worked. And we had, like, some of our team was at the Game Awards physically hitting all the buttons to go live, while some of us were at the studio hitting the same buttons and making sure that our different buttons, and just making sure that everything was up and going, and just seeing responses and talking to the community. Like, there was definitely a point during that where that trailer hit and I was at the awards and I was on my phone talking to the community immediately. I don't really remember much of the rest of that show, but that was a fantastic moment. It was really, really great to see so many different teams come together for it. And again, for the launch of that game, just seeing its reception and how people were loving it, and just being able to see that community really, really love what was done with it, which is really great. And then recently, everything we've been doing with Grounded, which is our newest game that we're doing in, like, early access Xbox game preview. And it's our first title as an Xbox Game Studio. So there's a lot of kind of, not pressure, but we want to make sure that we're reaching this new audience as a first party in a different way. And showing them this is what Obsidian does and how we talk to our community and how we want to have them along for this ride. So that's just been awesome since the announcement. We've just been kind of going month to month since release back in July to just kind of engage that community more, which has been a lot of fun. So there's a lot of wins. I think for the losses, it's been more of just like stuff I know didn't hit that are the way that we maybe thought they were going to. Maybe a trailer didn't turn out the exact way that we wanted or didn't engage the community in a way that we thought it was going to, or maybe more people seemed to like the trailer and then kind of bounced off the game really quick. Those are the ones that are kind of like, well, okay, that didn't hit, but at the same time you learn from them and you see what works and then adjust and then move forward. Like, I think you learn from your failings. You can always love your victories, but the failings is what actually teaches you to get better and get course corrected, I would say. So that's kind of been in the trajectory that we've been going since. So that's nice.
Yeah. I'm wondering if there was anything, you know, very early on in your career that you wish you knew, like if you'd be able to time travel, what advice would you give yourself?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I would probably just say that make sure you have thick skin very early.
Oh, okay.
There are times where something happens and the community is very, very, very mad and they use very, very choice words. And it's really hard not to like get that emotional response back immediately. Mm-hmm. And just knowing that, like, well, you can't say those things to somebody who is a human being. So pausing, breathing, knowing that, I always just kind of tell myself that they're just passionate. Like they're,
yeah. Just wanted to say that, you know, you're kind of lucky in a way because they're so passionate about the product. So that's, you know, the full part of the glass.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like we're very fortunate that if somebody's going to give that kind of a visceral response to us, that it just means that they care. Maybe they express that care incorrectly. But I think it's pretty great to see that at least they're like, I don't know if I've ever been at a point where I've been so angry at something that I've had to write someone to be like, now listen. So like, that's never really happened for me. So maybe I just don't have that same passion. So if somebody does, awesome. I'll talk to them. But it's knowing that it's not really personally towards you. It's towards a situation.
Right.
And being able to kind of divorce that is very, very key. And it took me a little bit to realize that, because I would just see it and like I would get drained, and it still happens. Like you see certain things and you can only not feel for them so much. I'm also kind of empathetic in that way where I just kind of want the best for everyone, and I feel their emotions and I'm like, oh, that sucks. Yeah, I get why you're really, really angry right now, and now I'm really sad because you're angry and I wish I could help you. So it's an interesting ride in that. But being able to, if I told myself earlier, like, hey, just prepare for this and you'll be fine, I think that's what I would do.
This gives me a nice segue to my next question about skills or habits or, you know, things that you struggled the most to develop in yourself or to build in yourself. Was there anything, like, probably there was, but what's, you know, the hardest one that for you?
It's separating that emotion. That gut emotional response when someone writes something to you and being able to actually logistically take it and go, okay, why are these words being said? What is actually causing this person to be this angry? Or why do they say the things that they said in this way? And then just filtering in how you can then best help them. And it's a crazy phrase, but I think it works, and just kill them with kindness. Because more often than not, as soon as you're like, I totally get that you're that angry, let me help you, buddy, they'll respond with, I am sorry, I was such an asshole. And then you can just have a conversation like a normal person from there. But it took a while to get to that point of kind of finding that right voice and method to be able to move over to that. It also took a while to just kind of find the confidence to be able to put things out there as the company. A lot of, like when I first started, when I transitioned, because I was like going into this role without really having done it anywhere else. And I was just like, hey, I'm going to start doing this thing because I think we should. I would check everything I was going to put out. Like, hey, I'm going to say this thing. It's not related to our games, but I think it'd be really engaging. And they'd be like, yeah, sure, do it. And that just happened for like 2 months, where almost everything I was about to send out, I would check with either our studio head or my direct boss, Darren, to just be like, hey, is this cool? Can I put this out there? And they would both be like, yeah. And it took Fergus coming in and being like, hey, I trust you. You're not going to say anything that's going to like bury us. Like, if you're going to post something, just post it, get stuff out there, do it your way and have fun. I was like, oh, thank you. Because I wouldn't have known otherwise. That started kind of building into like, okay, maybe I can start doing a little bit more with the account that's like just me to 11. And that got us to kind of the voice we have now.
I want to go to the present time a bit. You're the director of communications. Tell us a little bit, you know, about your typical day, if there's such a thing. If, you know, what does it look like? What's the first thing you tackle when you start your work day? If you have any particular rituals and, you know, what exactly it entails? You know, you manage a team, how big it is. What's the first thing you check on your phone in the morning? Basically, what does it mean to be Mikey Dowling at work?
Yeah. So I usually start my days with an insanely long walk. I find that that clears my head and I can kind of focus on things, or I'll just come up with ideas that I want us to try and do, or maybe help me tackle a situation that we're kind of stuck on and don't really have an idea for. So either walking and then sometimes jogging helps kind of focus in on that. So that's usually the start of the day. I'm typically either listening to music that on a random playlist that I put together, or lately it's the Critical Role podcast, just because I like hearing my friends play D&D. But that's kind of the start. And then when I get back, I'm looking through Twitter, just making sure if there's anything that we need to address, if there's anything that's going off, if there's a new trend that people are using that we can maybe jump on in some way, like the how it started, how it's going type thing. Like, what can we do with that, if anything, or do we want to do anything with that? Does it fit within everything else that we have to announce around that time? Just kind of be engaged there, check Facebook, check Instagram, like basically just go through the social channels and just see where people are talking and what they're saying. We have a stand up every morning with the communications team. And now that we're from work from home, it's just, we all hop on Teams. There's all together 9 of us on the team, including myself at this time. So we just go through, everybody says what they're planning on working on that day. If there's anything that they're stuck on that we can either help each other out with, or if I have to escalate it to get more support, we do that. And it's just kind of, if I also have company news or big events that we have coming up, or ideas that I'm thinking of that we can be doing, or what we can potentially be doing for X amount of months, we'll discuss those there. And then it's just, depending on the day, various amounts of meetings, emails, lots of emails. and then support. Everyone on our team kind of helps with the support tickets, depending on what's coming in, just so it's not all on one person. But I usually get the ones for people like, I want a job in the industry. Can I talk to somebody? And I can set them up with a recruiter or tell them about our internship programs. We get a lot of people who are just fans and just want to tell us that they love our games. So just talk to them directly. So stuff like that, which is pretty awesome. And then it depends on the day. It could be that I'm playing one of our games and giving feedback, or I'm reviewing a bunch of assets that are going to be shared on various social channels or on web pages, or I'm looking at trailers. So it depends on what's going on the project at any given moment.
I want to talk a little bit about productivity, because you mentioned meetings, and you mentioned emails and the community and checking what's happening on social media. There's, a lot of things, between all of those that you mentioned, but also, constant notifications, trying to keep in touch with everyone, especially now during, work from home, spreadsheets and reports and everything that is happening in the communication world. It's a very dynamic world. And I wanted to ask you, what stands between you and your most productive self? What's the biggest distraction from you? What interrupts your focus the most?
For me, it's mostly just meetings. But it's just because there might be a lot of them in a day, and I just kind of had to attend them and make sure that I'm actually present. Yeah. But there are some where I can be in a meeting, and now that we're in this work from home world, you can still get some other work done real quick if there's nothing like directly related to what you're doing. You just need to be a fly on the wall. Other than that, there isn't really too much that distracts. I'm kind of a person who I have a list of things that I want to tackle for that day, and then I just get through them because I like checking off things. And so I just strive to just make sure that something is no longer on a list at the end of that day. And if it is, mm-hmm. then I move it to the next one and make sure I tackle it first. So I just tend to focus but try and make sure that I'm staying cognizant of time as well. Mm-hmm. I'm not overworked, because it's really easy at home to just be like, well, I mean, I can put in another 2 hours. I'm already here. That was something I had an issue with in the very beginning, just because knowing when to stop and keep that mm-hmm. personal time was a little bit more difficult. But yeah, I'm not too much on distractions. Like, I'll sit and talk to people, text my partner, make sure everything's okay, and like, hey, are we playing games later? What's going on? But like, other than that, it's just work.
Mm. Since you talked a little bit about the hardest part in the work from home transition, I want to ask you what was the most uplifting part of the lockdown?
Well, oddly enough, I'd already been working from home for a while. I ended up breaking my ankle 2 days after we launched Outer Worlds. So I've been working from home for a little over a year now. Oddly enough, I healed up and was in the office for a week, and then we got closed down for the pandemic. So that was wild. But I knew what to do, so I can already help people in this work from home transition. I think the uplifting part is it's actually really easy to still stay connected, at least within the communications team. Mm-hmm. Our team can pretty much work from anywhere. Given what we do, and that we're not touching game code or pulling builds or anything like that. So ours is a little bit more lightweight and easier for remote, I think, in some regard. Mm-hmm. So it's been really easy to just maintain the same work ethic we would have had if we were in the office, which has been really, really cool. And because I think we talk every day still like we did at the office, it's kept us all connected and strong, which is really, really good.
Mm. One last question I have before we wrap up with our rapid fire session is around the trends that keep appearing every single day in the social media world, in the communications world. So many buzzwords, new trends, and I want to ask you, what's one trend or one buzzword or that one popular thing or belief in communications or social media today that is annoying you, or that you disagree with, or you think is massively overrated?
I don't know if it's a trend Well, maybe. So as much as I love Among Us, it's kind of crappy to see the word sus be used the way that it is from that game, given connotations it has to being pretty homophobic, and that kind of sucks to see. I've just seen friends who have had to deal with that word used to them negatively react to that word being used so casually now, and that sucks because I'm sure for them it hurts. And it's just that knowledge that people don't really have, I guess, of what that word means, and wouldn't know if they hadn't seen it affect someone else, because I didn't until I saw friends post it. I was like, oh crap, I would never use that way.
That's interesting.
So it's seeing trends like that where words kind of come up and be used, but you don't really know why or if they affect somebody in a way that maybe we don't realize, and not having the full story. So it's just being really cognizant. Like when I see new words going around, the first thing I do is look it up and like, where does this come from and why is it being used now? And did it have any bad connotations before? Because the last thing I would want to do is tweet something out using a word that can marginalize a group of people who have been too marginalized previously.
Right.
Because that's just not cool. We're about inclusivity and we don't want anybody to feel that we're attacking them, even if we're not trying to do it on purpose. Because that's just not us. And I want people to feel safe and know that our account is there to be with them no matter what. So yeah, it's things like that that I think kind of gets me when it comes to social media.
Mm-hmm. Being more mindful of what you adopt in terms of
yes.
language and words. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Good. So I have four quick questions for you. Questions, quick answers. And the first one is, what is your favorite, your personally favorite social media network?
I'm a big fan of Twitter. I think it's just fun and easy, and you can just kind of put something out there and may or may not engage. But I'm like, when I was first broken up, like with my ankle last year, I did like a whole movie month where I watched action films and just like would keep a thread going of me watching a new action film every day and like putting out the one-liners from them. And like, to me, that was a blast. Other people seem to really like it as well. So that's just fun because you can do it there. I wouldn't do like a huge thread on Facebook because it would just become a mess. And you can't really do that kind of thing on Instagram. So yeah, I think Twitter is definitely the go-to for me.
Highlights with stories, maybe that would be a way of doing it on Instagram, but yeah, not the same
thing. Yeah. Like I could do it just video, like just do a story video and be like, this is my actual reaction to these lines. But
yeah,
I also tend to write jokes and like, I'm not good at just speaking them directly. So
makes sense.
Like, yeah.
Makes sense. What's your favorite app or tool that you use at work?
For me, it's actually Teams. We like Teams or Slack, just because you can talk to people directly, organize groups pretty well. In Teams, we have everything set up for like each of our projects for the communications teams that if we're talking about the Outer Worlds, we're talking about it in this channel. If we're talking about Pillars of Eternity, it's talking about here, so on and so forth. We also keep an active calendar of just events and everything, because all of, like, Excel is integrated and all that stuff too. So it's been a huge tool for us to be able to just kind of use well as a team. And then at any point we can just be talking about something like, hey, no, let's just get into a call and we'll just jump in and talk it through and then move out and get on. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially now with, you know, coordination and alignment, it does make sense.
Yeah.
What's the worst advice you've ever received?
You shouldn't play video games. I've had plenty of people tell me when I was growing up that I spent too much time playing video games and that I wanted to amount to anything. And I think of those statements now and just laugh because of having so much fun with my life. Yeah, I love what I do, and I've always loved games. Behind me in this room is a library of N64 games, and pretty much every game I've ever collected is here. I have loved them forever, and so it's been a big part of me. And when I realized that's something I could actually be a part of, I was like, I need to do that. And I just worked really hard to get there. And now I'm in this place with them where I'm like having the most fun I could ever have talking to people who also love them every day and being able to be a part and support these development teams who I think are some of the smartest people on the planet and who are making such cool stuff that I can't wait to share more about with our community every single day.
This is a great answer, and good you didn't take that advice back then.
Yeah.
If you wouldn't be doing what you're doing today, what else would you do?
I did think about trying to do pro wrestling, and then I broke my ankle and was like, that sucked. I don't probably want to do that. I would probably be either still in retail, just doing stuff there. Mm-hmm. I flirted with going into law for a little while.
Oh.
So there's probably stuff. I also flirted with film and maybe just writing there and doing things. So there's a couple of different things that I could potentially be doing that weren't games. But I'm very, very happy to be where I am.
Mikey, this was such a great conversation. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your story, your journey with our audience. I really enjoyed chatting with you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for having me. This was awesome.
Yeah. And for everyone else listening in, thank you for joining. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. And don't forget, we have new ones every Wednesday. Subscribe to People of Marketing on your favorite podcast app. And till next time.